lesson number two. Since this isn't homework, this is just study guides. Okay, let's go back just for a moment and review just a little bit. In the first lesson, the primary focus of that lesson was on what? Anybody recall? You what? Okay, but what was it focusing primarily about, the Lord in missions?
Saving lost.
Compassion. It is really focused on Jesus' compassion for the lost. Okay? This particular lesson is really focusing a lot on Jesus' willingness, with that compassion that he had for the lost, his willingness to die for those who were lost. Okay? The idea of all of these lessons is to challenge us to look at, okay, do we have the compassion of Jesus, you know, for the lost? Okay? Are we really that concerned about them? Okay, as we look at this lesson, we're talking about Jesus being willing to die to save the lost. How about us? What are we willing to die to and to give up, even just to save the lost? Now, Dale was telling me that you guys talked about the examine it section on page two, the different scriptures that were there and all, looking at these passages that really focus on, you know, Jesus coming here for the lost. What was his attitude and his, you know, what was he trying to do? Couple of questions here. How important is it for us to understand, and that's really, I think, what a lot of these particular passages are focusing on, how important is it for us to understand the humanity of Jesus? Have you ever really thought about that?
Spend more time focusing on his deity than his humanity, but he was both.
Okay.
Which means he had all the same struggles, the same hurts, the same desires. He got hungry, he felt pain.
Okay.
Just like we do. Sometimes we think, yeah, life would be easy if I had God's power to just make anything happen that I wanted, but that's not the way that he chose to live. He can use his miraculous power to make things easy for him.
Okay, all right. Sometimes I think, you know, we tend to look at things and say, well, yeah, Jesus could do that because he was God. Which then really kind of says what we think about Jesus' humanity. Let me get somebody, if you would, to read Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. This is one of the texts that y'all were reading last week. Hebrews 2 and verse 9 and in verse 14. Who's got it? Anybody? Doesn't matter.
Verse 2, verse 9, and verse 14.
But we do see Jesus, who was made lower than the angels for a little while, now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. And you said 14?
14, right.
Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil.
Okay. Read the first part of verse 14 again, if you would.
Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death...
Okay, that's good. He too shared in humanity. All right? John makes an interesting comment in 1 John chapter 4, where he's talking about testing the spirits and so forth. And understand that John was writing the letters, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, at a time when there was a huge heresy within the church that was being propagated. And that heresy was called Gnosticism, right? And one of the tenets or beliefs of Gnosticism had to do with denying the humanity of Jesus. That basically was the idea that Jesus didn't really come here in the flesh as you and I are, but that he appeared to be in human form while he was here. And even some of the teachings that go along that line say that yeah, Jesus became a human, but before he died on the cross, he actually kind of left his humanity and became, you know, deity again. So basically what it is denying the humanity of Jesus, which then goes directly to denying the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Here's what John says in chapter 4, 1 John. He says, "Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." Verse 2, "This is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God." So you see, this whole issue of the humanity of Jesus was a problem in the first century, when the church was in its infancy, and it's still a problem today. I think for a lot of people today, the problem isn't so much in saying, no, Jesus didn't come in the flesh, but the problem is more along the lines of what Dale was saying, is that for many Christians, we don't have a problem focusing on the deity of Jesus, but really focusing on his humanity. We kind of neglect that at the very least, you see. And as I said a little while ago, the difficulty there is that when we really don't understand and acknowledge and accept the true humanity of Jesus, then it's really easy for us to get a by on a lot of the things that Jesus tells us to do. Okay, everybody following me? Because then it's like, as I said, we say, well, yeah, Jesus could do that because he was God. So how do you expect me to do that? Right? And even especially when it comes to things like forgiveness, which is a big part of that, that's really what this lesson is all about, right? Yeah, Jesus could forgive people because he was God, but you know, you're asking me to do the same thing. You don't understand what this person did to me, and you don't understand how much that hurt, and so on and so forth. I'm only human, by the way. How many times have you ever said that? Yeah. You see? So part of what I want to emphasize with this part of the lessons is the humanity of Jesus. Do we really comprehend and understand what the significance of that? When we read these passages and it talks about Jesus dying on the cross, okay, was it any easier for Jesus to do that than it would be for you and I to do it? Simply because he was God's son. But
during Jesus' time on earth, people saw him in the flesh, and they struggled with the fact that he was God.
Right.
And now here we are. We know.
Right.
We know, and we acknowledge him, but we still struggle with that. How can that be? You know, this is something that we're never going to comprehend. We acknowledge that he knows he did walk on this earth, and he does know what we go through. But how... God,
I'm with you on that. I don't purport to know or to understand how he does that. But
we who believe too, and we hold that dear, that he does know what we're going through. Well, then again, we can't comprehend that he was in the flesh and he went through what he did for us.
Right. See, that's the part we've got to get a handle on. Because, you know, when it talks about him dying on the cross, it talks about him giving his life and suffering the way that he did. You're talking about a human being here that went through all of that for us. Okay? Now, let me ask you another question here. This is not on your study guide here, okay? This is a pop quiz. All right? Here's the question. What would someone have to do for you to be willing to die for them? Just let that question sink in. What would someone have to do for you to be willing to die for them? Okay.
To me, it would be all about love. You're much more willing to suffer for someone you truly, truly love than you are for a perfect stranger.
Okay. All right. Who else? I saw another hand up. Wes?
I'm along the same lines as what she was saying. I was thinking that they would have to be dear to me more, you know, they would have to be dear most of them what they would do. Whereas most people, they feel that way to their loved ones or for their loved ones, but not so much for a stranger.
Okay.
But, also, before you asked that question, I was turning it over in my mind that one of the main things is Jesus wanted to do, and we generally don't want to.
Okay.
Because the fact that it's what we have to go through. We weigh what we have to go through, what I got to put out, what I got to, the stuff that I got to go through, and what I got to put out in order to help somebody else. And, you know, as far as whatever, you know. And
okay.
The more I got to help, the more I got to put out. So,
okay. You know, so we weigh that out, in other words, is what you're saying. Okay.
In some cases, it's split second. In some cases, in some cases, you may see somebody drowning. Not thinking, and boom, you go and help.
Okay.
Or run into a burning building, so to speak. But if something like where you see a person that's on the street begging, and you're like, I don't feel like it, you know.
Okay.
And it's not so much as a judge, but it's just that you don't want to get involved. You know, you don't want to. Point blank. You just don't want to.
Okay. Interesting. Any other thoughts on that?
One thing I was thinking, we've got so many people out there, like the firefighters, they don't know who those people are. They go in and try to save them.
Yeah.
And they know they're risking their lives every day.
This is their job.
Right, and it's their job, but they chose that job.
Right. So we have. So basically, we're talking about fools like Brian who go into a burning building. Brian and I always have this joke between us, you know, about police versus firemen. You know, he's crazy to run into a burning building to try to save someone, although I did that one time when I was a policeman. But he always would go, but you're willing to let people shoot at you, you know. These are folks. What about our military people? They're defending us, and they're laying their lives down. You know, we had two military people killed yesterday, you know, in Afghanistan. They don't know you. Not personally, but they're willing to lay their life down. You know, one part of this whole discussion has to do with that idea, again, of how well do we know this person, what are we willing to do, has to do with how valuable that person is. How valuable do we see that person you know, in our eyes. And so, you know, are we willing to lay down our life for someone that maybe we don't know? And certainly we wouldn't hesitate necessarily if it's somebody that we do know, and it's our child or our spouse or what have you. But what about that person that we don't really know? But what about that person that we do know that is just not a good person? Okay, how willing would you be to die for that person? Charlotte?
To be honest, really honest, even when it comes to loved ones, you don't know what you might do.
That's true.
Until you're in that circumstance. You don't know really what's going to drive you. You don't. Whatever that circumstance is, yes, if my child is in a burning building or a shooter, I'm going to do everything that I can in my power, but I'm not going to go beyond my power. I might not be able to say it again.
Yeah.
You know, I might not. So, to be honest with you, I don't know.
Don't know what you would do.
I don't know.
Okay.
I honestly, I can't say, yes, I'm going to do all I can for anyone.
Okay.
For anyone, if I see anyone. I've been in circumstances of working with people that you don't know, and something happens, and you got to that impulse. You go.
You just react.
Whether it's your job or not, whether you love them or not, you know, it's that compassion. It's all that kick in, and you don't think. You just go.
You've been trained not to think.
You don't
been
think.
Trained to react.
You just go.
But there is a certain part of us, though, that has to decide at that moment. You know, one of the things, like with policemen, and I'm sure Brian firemen are the same way, you know, policemen will stand around, they'll talk about, well, if this happened, I'd do this. You know, and they brag about, you know, I go in there and I do, you know, blah, 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 blah. The reality is, you're right, you don't know what you're going to do until you're faced with that opportunity, and then how do you respond and react? I've known, you know, police officers who were in those situations that didn't react very well because they thought about it and said, nope, not me. and it does have a lot to do with your training in that you respond and you react. But if you don't have a certain amount within you that's willing to do what it takes to get the job done, then you're going to go, nah, not today. A lot of it is just the adrenaline and the training, and you respond and you react based on what your training tells you to do, and you know, and so forth. But again, there still is that certain part of you that, you know, you realize in the process of it that you're putting yourself in the dangerous situation. But we evaluate. We look at and say, you know, okay, well, is this person worth dying for? You know? Listen to what Paul says. He wrote to the church in Rome, chapter 5, beginning in verse 6. He says, "You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the righteous." Wait a minute, Chuck's back there. Some of you are shaking your heads. What does it say there? It doesn't say righteous. What does it say? The ungodly. Okay? "Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." In other words, we were totally lost, okay? But though we were sinners and totally lost, what did we have as far as God was concerned? Value. Enough. He loved us that much. He saw the value in us, that he's willing to die for us. All right, now let me add another twist to this, okay? You know, again, we might say, and in various professions, you know, we're willing to lay our life down for someone, and, you know, I'd die for you, and You know, if I had to, I think I could honestly say that if I were put in a situation, I would lay my life down for any one of you in here. Okay? And I have put my life on the line many times. I got involved in a shootout one night right over here at Central State Hospital. And I did the wrong thing, though. When I got home, I was so hyped up with adrenaline and everything else. When I got home, I woke Cindy up and told her, guess what, I got involved in the shootout tonight. I was so excited. She said, great, that's just what I wanted to hear, you know. Don't bring your work home with you. But, you know, we do that. We're willing to do that to a certain extent, right? What if a whole group of folks surrounded your house, started demanding that you send out your child? Oh, well, it's coming. Okay. I mean, this crowd is angry. Okay? Yeah, depends on which one I'm going to send out, right? What are you going to do to them? Okay. Come here, Charlie. Come over here. They're an angry crowd. They're a mob. Okay? And they're demanding that you send your child out. And what are they going to do to your child? You know that what they're going to do is they're going to take them and beat them and torture them. And they're going to kill them. Now, how many guns do you have in your house? And what are you going to do to protect your child? I mean, these are bad people, okay? These are bad people that want to hurt and abuse and torture and kill your child. And you know that. That if you send them out, that's what they're going to do. You know, as I said a moment ago, I would lay my life down for any one of you if I had to. But don't ask me to give you one of my children. I don't love you that much, okay? I don't love you that much. I'll give myself. I'll die for you personally, but I'm not going to give you one of my children knowing that that's what you would do with them. That's not going to happen. I got guns too. So you want them, come and get them. But isn't that exactly what God did?
Yes.
Knowing what the mob was going to do to his son, sent him here anyway. While we were still powerless, while we were full of sin, he sent his son here, knowing what was going to happen to him. And knowing that in his humanity, he would feel every lash of that whip, every thorn that stuck into his scalp. Every nail that went through his skin, every spear, he felt the pain of every one of those things. He did it for people that weren't worthy of it at all. We can look at that and say, yeah, but he was God. I'd suggest to you that's the wrong answer. Because how much of our time are we willing to give up for someone else? How much of our money, how much of whatever it is that is required of us help someone be saved? Are we willing to die to and to give up for someone else? Oh yeah, if it's, you know, a loved one, we'll spend all kinds of time studying the Bible with them, hoping that they'll obey the gospel to be saved. But what about that guy that's out on the street corner begging or whatever? Are we willing to do that for them? See? Jesus gave up his life. So often we're not willing to give up a few minutes of our time or an hour of our time or whatever. My point here, folks, is that we really have to understand in our heart the humanity of Jesus and what he did and why he did it, so that we can be seeking to have the same kind of compassion and the same kind of forgiveness, willingness to forgive. So that we're willing to die for not just the ones who are valuable to us, but even those who have hurt us. So they would have the chance of eternal life. Brian, you had your hand up a moment ago. So, you know, as we talk about Jesus' desire to forgive, the challenge for you and I is, how willing are we to forgive folks that hurt us? So that perhaps they might be saved. The explain it and express it part here, the first question under there, focusing on the Lord's Prayer, Father, forgive them. Think about what happened to Jesus from the time he entered the garden, as Brian just pointed out, until he uttered this prayer, Father, forgive them. What'd you put down? Those of you who did your study guide, not homework. Anybody have a response to that? Let's think about the physical things that he went through. Brian just mentioned one of them. Okay.
Pray.
Okay. His agony did not start with the beatings and the slashings. The gospel accounts tell us that in the garden he was in agony as he prayed. Okay. doctors, physicians that have examined the record and so forth of Jesus' prayer in the garden and the whole issue of, well, they've examined the whole crucifixion and all, but the part in the garden, they've said that a person under extreme stress, the capillaries in the forehead can burst. And that's what would cause that bleeding, that he was sweating drops of blood, the scriptures say, most likely from that, that the capillaries in his head were bursting because of the stress that he was feeling. Human or not human? How much stress would be upon you if you had to carry the weight of the sins of the whole world? What else? Well, what else happened to Jesus? You just kind of follow the line here. What else happened to him before he uttered those words, "Father, forgive them"?
Everybody left.
Okay. Yeah.
Everybody.
Before they got out of the garden. One of them even was so scared he left without his clothes. Right?
All his friends.
Yeah. Everybody left. Okay? What else happened?
He's mocked.
Okay? He's mocked.
He's beaten.
Beaten. Okay. Well, before we even get to that mocking and beating part, okay? Well, what about the false accusations? You ever been falsely accused of something? Somebody accused you of doing something and you didn't do? How did it make you feel? Yeah. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. We'll straighten this out. I didn't do it.
But he never resisted.
Okay.
Part of that is because he knew if he did argue, he could be successful.
Okay.
And because Pilate was looking for a reason,
yeah,
to let him go. All he had to do was say, "I'm not guilty," and Pilate would have let him go.
Yeah.
He had to specifically allow himself to be crucified.
Yeah.
I mean, we say it's, I could do that if I were God, but being God makes it harder because he had the power to stop this at any point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing if we're being tortured and killed, but imagine if you had the power to just wave your hand and strike everybody dead that was doing that and refraining from using that power.
Yeah. You could have called 10,000 angels, right? You did? Right? What else happened to him?
Again, just communicating. If we know that he and God had the power to destroy the world, then but also to me that it is so relegated to the great amount of love and passion that he had for the world that he did not need that.
Okay. I think it's a powerful point to understand. Like you're saying, he had this power to just, say, "Okay, I'm done with this," and wipe it all away and kill everybody. He didn't have to kill them. He could just make them all blind and he could kind of slip away, right? He certainly had that power. But I want to suggest to you that there was another power that was overriding that power. Anybody know what it was? Yeah, that's a part of this, which really is the focus of this whole thing here. It's the power of forgiveness. The power of forgiveness was stronger, I would suggest to you. You don't have to agree with me on this, but the power of forgiveness, driven by the love, okay, was overwhelming the power to just go, "Forget this, I'm not doing it. I'm not going through this." He wanted so badly to forgive his creation that he didn't exercise the other power that he had. Dale?
It's kind of like a parent. Whenever your child does something that you don't like, maybe they even physically hurt you.
Okay.
You know, on an accident or on purpose. But you specifically don't respond sometimes, or
okay.
You don't use the power that you have as a parent because of love.
Okay.
You know, if they accidentally did something and broke your arm, you're not going to turn around and break their arm. Instead, you still love them. You know, even if they made a mistake, you still care about them.
Power of forgiveness was so overwhelming, you know, that going through all the things that he went through, was able to utter those words, "Father, forgive them."
They don't know
what they're doing.
It's the same with your child. You know, they don't know what they're doing. They may not realize that they just hurt you by something they did or said.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the favorite things of children is to tell the parents, "I hate you," because they're learning to manipulate them.
Right.
Whenever they do that.
Okay.
Jesus didn't do anything wrong. He had all the right to act to give justice that day, but he held his justice back for our mercy.
Okay. Yeah. The second question under this explain and express it, how did Jesus feel physically and emotionally as he uttered this prayer? How do you think he felt? Again, physically, you got to go back to the humanity part of it.
Worn out.
Exhausted physically? You know, we'd like to think that, you know, there were some, you know, holes already in his hand that, you know, were kind of there and the nails just kind of went through and didn't really hurt, right? You know, because he was God.
He had real pain and real suffering.
Yeah. You have to keep in mind that, you know, the Romans did not invent crucifixion, but they perfected it. And they did not design crucifixion to be a swift death. It was designed and intended to be a slow, painful, torturous, full of agony. And that's what he went through. That's what he was going through when he uttered those words. Forgive them. Know not what they're doing. We're just about out of time. We're going to pick up with the last three questions on this page next week, and we'll continue on to the next page and see how far we can get in this. But I really want to encourage you between now and then to really in your heart focus on the humanity of Jesus. You really need to grasp that. Okay? In order to really understand how badly Jesus wanted to forgive humanity. All right? Thank you all very much.